ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 1 कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 60 टेक्स्ट नंबर 13। अपष्ट वर्तमान पुंसाम आलोकपथम यूषाम आस्थितः पदवीं सुभ्रू प्रायासिदन्ति योषितः। अपष्ट वर्तनाम अपष्ट वर्तमानाम पुंसाम आलोकपथम ईयुषाम आष्टितः पदवीं सुभ्रू प्रायसिदन्ति योषितः। अपष्ट वर्तमानाम पुंसाम आलोकपथम ईयुषाम आष्टितः पदवीं सुभ्रू प्रायसिदन्ति योषितः। आस्थिता पदवीं सुभ्रू प्रायासिदन्ति योषितः। अपष्टत आस्थिता पदवीं सुभ्रू प्रायासिदन्ति योषितः। लेडीज, अस्पष्ट वर्तमानं पुंसाम् लोकपथम् ईयुषाम् आष्टितः पदवीं सुभ्रू प्रायासिदन्ति योषितः। अस्पष्ट अनसर्टन वर्तमानाम हुज बिहेवियर पुंसाम ऑफ मेन अलोक नॉट एक्सेप्टेबल टू ऑर्डिनरी सोसाइटी पथम वे ईयुषाम हु टेक टू आष्टितः फॉलोइंग पदवीम द पथ Subhru, O you whose eyebrows are beautiful, Prayaha, usually, Siddhanti, suffer, Yoshitaha, woman. Translation, O fine-browed lady, women are usually destined to suffer when they stay with men whose behavior is uncertain and who pursue a path not approved by society. Niskinchana vayam shashvam niskinchana jana priyah tasmat prayena nahi adhya mam bhajanti su madhyame. We have no material possessions and we are dear to those who similarly have nothing. Therefore, O slender one, the worldly hardly ever worship me. Purport. Like the Lord, his devotees are uninterested in material sense gratification, being awakened to the superior pleasure of Krishna consciousness. Those who are intoxicated by material wealth cannot appreciate the supreme wealth of the kingdom of God.
Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Utapadakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Shahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Shute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram
By the mercy of Srila Prabhupada we are allowed entrance into something very confidential. While other theologies of this world are still groping with the concept of the nature of God and the absolute truth, which is very enigmatic and sometimes almost utopian, and at best they can grasp through their holy scriptures and revealed scriptures some faint understanding of what God is or what God may be. And yet the conception is so very hazy in most religious traditions of this world. We cannot but be grateful to Srila Prabhupada and the Parampara that they are giving access to Krishna, who is the epitome of the realm of the absolute truth. He is the absolute truth. In fact, there is nothing beyond Krishna. Aham Adiri Devanam. He is the Adi of everything. And even beyond that, it is not that it just stops there by telling us that Krishna is the absolute truth. It goes even way beyond that. It tells us something more profound, something more revealing, something so extensive. It goes into his nature, his activities, his demeanor, his form, his mindset, his likes and dislikes, his entourage, the abode. It gives us such extensive information on so many diverse and most beautiful aspects of the realm of the absolute truth. So here we are, we have entered through a gradual evolutionary process, sort of, where we have begun with the first canto, and we have now blessed to reach the 10th canto. And now it is Krishna who has just left Vrindavan. He had a small but important work to do at Mathura, and now he is in his Grihastha ashram, where he is living as the king of Dwarka. And we are now allowed entrance into not only Dwarka, but partly into Krishna's palace, into his bedroom. And we are hearing what a husband and a wife would talk. So that's how deep, that's how much the access the bhakti process allows us to reach. How deep is the process? And how deep is the access we have to Krishna's absolute private talk with his principal queen, Rukmini Devi? So we cannot allow this to just pass as an ordinary one of those type of things which we just hear as casual. But let us register in our hearts that this is something supernatural and extraordinary which Krishna is now talking to his beloved wife. We heard about teasing yesterday. The whole class was about Krishna teasing his wife. And Krishna is in a little joking mood. All of us have different moods. It is not that we always, as a devotee, is grave. But a grave devotee can also be joking. So there could be joking, there could be gravity, there could be light moments, there could be chastisement, or there could be, various moods affect all of us at different times of the day, whatever, different situations. So here Krishna has now done something powerful. He's done something extraordinarily powerful. He's destroyed Mura and Bhomasur. They are real tyrants, real powerful terrorists. And, nobody could have killed them. He had to grab people from, the women from Siddhaloka and demigods, planets and apsaras and all that. And nobody could even touch Bhomasur. He was invincible, son of Bhumi Devi. He was invincible. But Krishna, the way he is, Daksha. Krishna is Daksha, the original Daksha. He's expert at everything he does, and he was shooting arrows before even the Shatagni could reach him from Mura's hands. But now all that being action-packed thing being over, now it's time to just go back to the palace and relax. So he's now relaxing after hard work with Garuda. It is a real powerful physical workout sort of for Krishna. He has killed powerful demons. Now he's just relaxing with his wife. And he's having some joking talk. So we are entering into that. And he's glorifying Rukmini Devi's beauty in beautiful words. And he's specifically talking about who are the people who really worship him. He's using this beautiful, nice words here. He's saying that, my dear Rukmini Devi, your most beautiful one, you know the people who really worship me. So Krishna accepts that people worship him, that he is worshipable, he is Aradhya, Aradhya Bhagavan he is. He is Brajasthanayas, he is Aradhya definitely. But do you really know the type of people who worship me, my fan club, who really worships me? As far as I am concerned, Krishna is saying, I have nothing. I have no material possessions. I didn't inherit anything from my father. And the father could have given him a lot, but the father was in jail for a long time. Vasudeva had kingdoms. He was the king of Mathura. We know that. But he was imprisoned by Kamsa and, he lost. He lost the right to his throne, and then, everything was over. So Vasudeva had not much to give to Krishna in that sense. So I have no material possessions, and the people who worship me also are people who really don't have anything. So the people who really have something, who are really rich, they hardly come to me. The guys who have money, they don't hardly come to me. So, even if I am worshipped, even if I get offerings from my devotees, it will be people who have got nothing. So even if I am expecting that I will get some remuneration from people who worship me, and therefore, we both will have a good time in this palace. But, I'm not going to get anything, because the people who have worshipped me are like, what do they call? Fakir. Fakir is, kuch nahi hai. And within this beautiful words, there is such deep meaning, because Krishna is not just joking. Krishna, everything that Krishna says is wonderful, and therefore there is a lot of meaning behind everything he says. And Krishna is here accepting for a fact that he has no material possessions. And that's so true. But actually, Krishna is so supremely divine that he has nothing material. From Krishna's point of view, there is nothing material. Everything Krishna has is spiritual. Because he is spiritual, janamadi asya yataha. He is Supreme Spirit, the whole spirit, the wholesome spirit who is the soul of all other spirit souls. Nityo nityanam. Chetana chetananam. So he is the Supreme Spirit whole. And therefore, because he is Supreme Spirit, order that comes out from also is spiritual. So where is Krishna going to have anything material? Right? Krishna has got absolutely nothing material. It's a fact. Everything is in the realm of Devi Eshaguna Mami. Devi Mamaya Durutaya. It's the divine energy of Krishna. Right? So Krishna, it is only way beyond Krishna's expansions after Balramji Maharaj and the quotable expansions after Sankarshan, where the Narayan manifest and Nandirudha Pradyumna, and then last you have the Purusha avatars. It is there that Krishna in the form of the Purusha avatars starts for the first time coming in contact with material nature. Between Krishna and Purusha avatars, all of them who are the expansions, millions and billions and quadrillions of them, they have absolutely no connection with material energy whatsoever. He is Trigunatita. He is beyond the material existence. It is only for the first time as a Purusha avatar, the three Purusha avatars which are there, who actually breathe out material energy from the Mahatattva. And the Mahatattva is acted upon by time factor, that is churning, and there is actually emulsification and manifestation of various entities come out with the material bodies based on their desires. Right? So the first time it starts off from the Purusha avatars. Before that there is nothing material whatsoever. It's all divine energy of the Lord, pure spirit. So Krishna is here in one sense when he says, I have no material possessions, he is actually qualifying his status. He is actually qualifying for his status for all of us to understand that actually Krishna is completely spiritual. He's completely spiritual. And of course, only down the line, then we'd go beyond and come to Lord Shiva. Then Shiva is like a tattva which goes between material and spiritual. Then you come to that. So from pure spiritual, then you have manifestations, then you have Shiva tattva becomes partial material spiritual manifestation. So you have some amount of tamagun which may affect Lord Shiva sometimes. And then you have Brahma, who is completely into material energy. So we can seek a devolution. You have evolution, we have devolution of involvement with material energy. So it devolves. And then comes to Brahma, who then controls completely his particular realm of material affairs in a particular Brahmanda. Right? And then you have various demigods who go further down, who have different, within that material realm they have different departments. So departmental heads, universe, Vayu, Chandra, Agni, all that. So we have lessening control from the supreme control and goes down like that. Then comes to material world, we have kings, you have limited control, then you have, goes on like that. So you have smaller and smaller control, a big hierarchy. So then that's the way we try to understand when Krishna says, I have no material possessions. And said, you know, and people who really worship me also people who have got nothing. All fakirs, nothing. Why is that? Because generally Krishna may say, is go brahmanitayacha. He's dear to the brahmanas, Vaishnavas, right? And we can reminisce at this point the story of why brahmanas are always poor. Right? We know the story. It's a very famous, nice story. When Bhrigu Muni tried to really evaluate through experiential investigation as to who among the Trinity was really the supreme. And the candidates only three, because other candidates did not fit into the experimental framework. It was only Brahma, Vishnu and Maheshwar. So at least they were sure that it is one of the three. They're not very sure who, but you know they knew that it's one of the three. They didn't go to any, you know, Baba or Vua like that. At least they were wise enough to understand that we see a lot of divinity here in these three personalities. They're all divine, pure, exalted. Must be one of these three who are controlling everything. And we know the story how Bhrigu Muni went from one to another and then he kicked the last of the corporeal assault on Vishnu's chest. When we worship Gopijan Vallabh Bhagavan, he still has that Bhrigumuni lotus feet on his chest. He has taken that. It is not even Gopinath and Gopalji, but Govardhan Vallabh carries that Bhrigu mark on his chest. It is a very wonderful sight to see. So then he was kicked there. And then obviously a good chaste wife cannot just look at this, somebody just saying this, doing this, you know, very grievous offense. And who is this? This is God. You're kicking on God's chest. You cannot expect his wife to just say, oh yeah, yeah, it's nice, it's fine. It's okay, you know. Go ahead, you know. She was absolutely, you know, traumatized by this emotional experience that she has to visualize something so bad happening to her husband. That in her presence, something so bad happened. And she was absolutely unhappy. And she felt that she was in some way, you know, responsible, and she should do something about it. She cannot just, as they say, you know, lie low on this. So she cursed. I curse you, that all you brahmanas will be always poor. I will never come to you. Right? And what a blessing that is. Arunam Prabhu. What a blessing. Because Lakshmiji is Sri. She is Ladini Shakti of the Lord. Her curses can never be a curse. Even ordinary munis, like, not ordinary munis, let's say, nobody's ordinary. Astavakra muni and these munis. Even when these munis curse, even they are, you know, they're not necessarily pure Vaishnavas, but when these munis curse, it turns out to be a good blessing, eventually. So we're talking about people like, personalities like Lakshmi Devi cursing. It cannot be a... So she cursed the brahmanas that you people, your entire flock of people, all your entire batch of brahmanas from now onwards down the line, whoever is there, they all will be poor people. Really poor people. And that brings us to the next part of the sloka, where it says, and of course the Prabhupada also substantiates this, it says that, the reason is in the purport, that Lakshmi Devi is in this way protecting all Vishnu's devotees, as it says, that those who are intoxicated by material wealth cannot appreciate the supreme wealth of the kingdom of God. Right? So one of the biggest deterrents for a conditioned soul in this world, which stops him from appreciating the glory of God, is when he is, rather, people may say blessed, but from this point of view, when he is cursed with a lot of wealth. Because when you have so much of wealth, the auratmika shakti of maya takes complete charge of your consciousness. Avarana means to cover. Auratmika means the covering potency of mahamaya. And because we identify so strongly with the wealth we have, we find wealthy people really do not come to God so much. It's a fact. It is artho arthaarti jigyasu granicha bharatar sabha. It is those who are really poor, they are distressed, they are suffering, they don't know what to do with their lives. Like that brahmana who was there in Jagannath Puri, you know the story, last chapter of Chaitanya Mangal. You know the nice stories there, how this brahmana was there, and he was like, he was living in South India, in Dravid Desh, you know, and he came and said, oh, I have nothing in my life. I got so poor, emaciated, skinny, bony. Said, I know, the only one who can help me is Jagannath. So he went to Jagannath Puri. He went to Jagannath Puri and started spinning from Jagannath and said, oh God, you're supposed to be a Brahmana Hitayacha. But look at this Brahman of yours. I have got no food to eat. Look at my stomach. It's touching my vertebral column practically. It's stuck to my vertebral column. There's no food inside my belly. And I'm so thin and bony. So I'll just fast here. So he just said, I'll just fast in front of you for the next 7 days. And Jagannath was just smiling at him. Haribol. But he understood. He was, in one sense, very upset with Jagannath's apparent, inattention towards him. But he understood deep down. He even said it a couple of times, that, you know, I know it's a curse from my past life. I must have offended somebody, and then I'm really suffering from my past deeds, and I know I'll not be really happy till I really get rid of this karmic reaction. So, this is my plight, this is my destiny, this is my fate. But at the same time, what about my stomach? So he was not able to, you know, reconcile to his life situation. He said, he went to the bank of the Jagannath Puri ocean and said, I'm going to drown myself here. He said, ocean, give me a place to stay. I'm going to drown there. And then he suddenly found a huge person coming out from the ocean. He said, who is this? He was aghast. The mountainous personality came out. He said, oh. And then he walked from the ocean, and as he came to the bank, he reduced to small size, human size. And he just started walking. He said, he's running. This must be Jagannath. This must be Jagannath. This must be God. He said, he will probably help me, you know. So he's just running behind him. And he said, he noticed somebody is coming behind. He said, who are you? I said, I am this and that, I'm poor, but who are you? He said, I am Vibhishan. I am Vibhishan, I have come from Lanka to meet Lord Chaitanya. I said, he said, come with me. I said, where are you going? He said, I'm going. Can you please come along? And then it's a nice pastime where he meets Lord Chaitanya and they have a nice dialogue. Mahaprabhu meets and greets, discusses something with Bhishma. Nobody understands in the room. Maybe some strange language they are talking. I don't know what they are talking. And this Brahman is looking outside. Who's this? And the Bhishma comes out and said, who was that? Who's the Swami you met inside? He said, he's Jagannath Sakshat. Sri Jagannath. And he went inside and said, please help me. Please save me. So he said, you know, Vibhishan, go and take care of him, you know. He's a nice man, but, you know, just take care of his, give him some wealth, you know. Jagannath has, so he understood that Jagannath has sent us Vibhishan on, you know, as his mercy. So there are some people who are like that, you know, really impoverished. So in this way you can see this Brahmana came to the Lord because he was having nothing. So people come to God when they don't have much. But when they have much of this world, then they don't feel the need for God. That's such a sad thing. Huh? And they do not recognize that it is God who has given me all this. And at the time of death, it's all going to become big zero. Right? So here, we are able to understand two concepts. Material wealth, and the Prabhupada talks about spiritual wealth. So let's try to understand what is material wealth and what is spiritual wealth. Because we are living in a world, and the type of social circumstances we are in Kali Yuga, where there is a complete over bombardment and over emphasis on the gaining material wealth. The propaganda in the newspapers, videos, channels, social media is that the success of life of every individual, of every family, of every community, every state and every country is only based on economic growth. And that's such an immensely powerful propaganda that nobody can resist this. Even the man of wisdom and discrimination are swept into this rat race of getting some money by hook or by crook. Good ways and bad ways, right ways and wrong ways, legal ways and illegal ways. But get money, because that's the only mapadanda, that's the only parameter of success. So that is success, then I'm going to get success. And that's what I do, anything for the getting that success. And nothing is wrong if I get success in this way or that way. Everything is alright. So there is complete oblivion in today's situation where anyone has any understanding that there is a whole realm of what is called as spiritual wealth. What is spiritual wealth? Now in simple words, Radhanath Swami says this, uses this line oftentimes, and it's a very beautiful line to meditate upon. A wealthy person is that who has things which money cannot buy. When you have those things with you, which money, you have to count those things. What are those things which I have? Can I make a list? I have A, B, C, D, X, Y, Z, 10, 11, 50, 100, 200, whatever. How many things do I have with me which I can say has not come to me because of the money I have? Because money can buy anything. It can buy justice, it can buy cars, it can buy countries, it can buy anything. You can buy with money anything. It's true. Today's world, you can buy the law with money. The supreme power in the country is always the law. Judicial power is the highest power. Huh? And you can buy judicial power also sometimes succumbs to the bribery of money. So, what is really... But if you have those things, as Maharaj says, which money cannot buy, then you are truly considered to be wealthy. So what are those things? Because as he says here, those who are awakened souls, those who are awakened, being awakened. So hopefully, uttishta jagrita, Upanishad says, uttishta jagrita. Uttishta means to get up, jagrita means to become awake, alert, jagrit, conscious. Those are uttishta jagrita souls. They are the people. Who are those souls? Who are they? They are those who are also pursuing with great passion, with great eagerness and great perseverance. They have a desire to accumulate more and more spiritual wealth. That craving for wealth is there because it is natural. It is natural to crave for wealth. It's natural. But it's unnatural to crave for just material wealth alone. In the material world, we have broadly three categories of people. Thakur Bhaktivinoda has classified in many ways. But in a broad understanding, we can see there are three categories of people in the world. One is the theistic moralist. The theistic moralists are people who are actually believers of God. And they live a very moral life, a simple life, a good life. And then you have the atheistic moralist, who don't believe in God, but they're still moralist. And then you have the atheistic immoralist, right? Who don't believe in God and don't believe in morality. So in broadly speaking, there are these three important categories of people in this world. Right? So obviously, the immoralist, atheistic people are denounced. Nobody likes them. I mean, I cannot say that. People like them. People really like them these days. You know, somebody was there many years ago who did this big scandal in the scam in the stock exchange. You won't take his name. Who ran into hundreds of crores of rupees. People said, yeah, the guy really knows how to earn money. Yeah? And he had swindled crores and crores of people's money, institutions' money and all that he had done. He was arrested. He was in jail. I think he even died now. He died in jail. You know, thanks to all his hard labor, it was sufficient enough to put him in jail and kill him there. So, people who are in Prabhupada's language, we don't use this in public so much, but we can, just to understand the reference, he said, dogs, hawks, camels and asses. So people of that category, animalistic civilization, they will glorify the atheistic immoralist as being great guys. So there's always a category of people who will be glorified. But the average people in this world who are glorified are the atheistic moralist. That are people seem to like most. So he doesn't believe in God, but he's a nice man and this and that. And so they're like really popular. So these are the people who are really conscious. The atheistic immoralists are completely not bothered about God, not bothered about society. They don't care a damn for anybody's consideration. The next category of the atheistic moralist, they care for their image in society. They very much care. So they are actually not sattva-guna, mind you. They are raja-guna because they are extremely conscious about the popularity they gain from their self-righteous behavior. So they're very conscious that nothing should be done which, somehow tarnishes this image. So, lekin samaj mein kya hoga? In India it is very common to find people who are very conscious of the samaj. The samaj, the image of the in samaj should not be somehow tarnished. So they are atheistic, but they are very conscious of what the world looks them as. So they are, in that sense, very passionately attached to their own image of being good people of this world, very, very severely attached to that image which they have created for themselves. And the highest category, the theistic moralist, people who care about society and they also care about what God thinks about them. So they are really balanced people. People who are really, really people who are very careful to conduct their lives on the mundane level as moralist and on the spiritual level as theistic people who have the devotion to God, to Vishnu. Right? So this is the category which is the most balanced type of human existence possible in this world. And that assures you lasting happiness while you're on the planet, and also assures you everlasting bliss after you die. So it's a great deal. Being a theistic moralist is actually the road to success and happiness in this world. Because it is not just about God, God, God and like that, but actually you live a life which is in accordance with the traditions, the moral values, the social customs of this world, that keeps you intact in a framework which society expects you to be in, right? So you're seen as sincere, you're seen as hardworking, you're seen as an honest person. And you also, within your heart of hearts, deep within, you are attached to something very profound. The Lord's lotus feet. You are attached to the feet of Sri Radha and Sri Krishna. But that's something internal. That's something your internal. But on an external platform, you practice as strict moralist. So it's a myth sometimes for all of us who are here to think that we can be spiritualist and be immoral. And Prabhupada really condemned this very severely in all of us in the world, where they may take the garb of being a spiritualist, either a dress or a name or a attire or you know, whatever, or a format of connection with an institution, a cult or society, which is spiritual, and yet being connected with something so nice, and they still have immoral behavior, that was severely condemned by Srila Prabhupada. Because that, in that way, you really don't gain any spiritual wealth. We are losing. In fact, if you're gaining something spiritually, if you're immoral, it's like having holes in your pot. So even if your pot is gathering wealth, but there are so many holes in that pot, so because of immoral activities, you just drain off everything. And you cannot gather any long-term benefits or credit points from that. Right? So it's important to understand that you seal those pot by a moral behavior. Right? So then, coming back to the point, what are those things which we are talking about over here today? What are those things which we can gather which money cannot buy? And the first and foremost thing is a good character. Character cannot be purchased in the market or any tutorial classes or by any capitation fees or bribing anybody else. We cannot buy character in the market. It's a self-cultivated internal affair. Therefore, those who are spiritually awakened are very active inside. And those who are not connected inside are very active bahirmukha. When you say bahirmukha, means they are completely active outside in getting this, running around, having a passionate life, this, that, phoning, you know, three mobiles, people say you cannot get three mobiles, and one laptop, and there's a computer at home, and there's something there. They want to be even connected with everyone except God. connection. You want to remain connected on Twitter and Facebook and WhatsApp, connected with the whole damn world without connected, not connected to your own soul. Not connected to the source of the soul, that is God. What a pity. That you're not even connected to yourself. Try to connect to the whole damn world outside of you. Your brother, your sister, your friends, your girlfriends, your boyfriends, this, everything. What about your soul? You're completely estranged, disconnected from your own self. So yoga means actually to connect to your own self first, before you even connect to God. You connect yourself to God through yourself. If you don't connect to yourself, you cannot connect to God. Is it not? So the first one they say is this Tattva Vibhrama, this concept of Tattva Vibhrama, where you don't even know who you are first. So the first thing is to destroy the Tattva Vibhrama, that I am a spirit soul servant of God. Because if you don't have Tattva Vibhrama, then there's going to be intense asat trishna. Complete madness to gain something so temporary. That asat trishna, the thirst for something asat, is going to ravage your consciousness so badly that you will lose all kinds of spiritual wealth. The moment you establish the first step, that is Tattva Vibhrama, you understand. Oh. So even if you have invested something in this, you will be protected. The story worthy of understanding this connection is Yamunacharya. Yamunacharya is a person who had invested in Tattva Brahma by really living in the Gurukul of Bhavashacharya when he was a young boy. We know the story, right? The young boy, very, very profoundly connected in Sanskrit and scholarly nature and study and discipline and rigorous, you know, Brahmacharya and all that this goes with, you know, Gurukul teaching. And then the whole story says how, you know, he landed up going to a debate competition with Kolahala, and he destroyed Kolahala's, you know, pride with his three simple questions. And the wife had bet, you know, based with her husband, they said, okay, if this boy wins this debate match, you will share half the kingdom with him. So this young boy of 12 years, suddenly from a, you know, poor, his guru also was a poor man. He was a Brahmin, obviously, so he was poor. So he had a poor man, yet he couldn't pay the taxes to Kolahal, you know. And he was in a poor guru and a poor disciple of a poor guru. And now from complete poverty, from rags, he was now into a riches where half the kingdom belonged to him at 12 years of age. Who? That was just too much, right? It's not just getting a, you know, from a poor man to a, you know, 2 BHK, 3 BHK, it's like a whole palace, you know, the properties and treasuries and elephants and, you know, whatnot. It goes with the king. Everything was his to enjoy. So of course he was very careful in the beginning, but we know the story how material energy is very powerful. This Avanatmika Shakti part of the is very powerful. It covers us. So that's the danger of pursuing material wealth. You get covered over. You get just covered over. You just lose connection with reality of yourself. Become completely forgetful of your spiritual, original spiritual nature. That happened with him also. He got involved and he started growing, conquering, expanding, and he became a very big king now with large properties and expanding domains from realm to realm. He was going, and he was a celebrity. He was a big man. And people are lining up to meet him. But his grandfather, Nathamuni, had told Ram Mishra that, you know, my grandson has lost. I have lost my grandson. Look at my grandson's plight. He is now completely dunk down, deep head into materialism. I want him to remind you of his original spiritual wealth. That is my job I give you as a task on my behalf before I leave this world. And he died. So Ram Mishra, able disciple of Nathamuni, was trying to figure out how can I get this big king out of this mess. He's already, you know, like, you know, the story is very beautiful. He started sending secretly one Tudu Valai Nam type of spinach. It's very good for health. He started sending. And the king started getting on his plate because, you know, this Ram Mishra could not even imagine getting an appointment with the king. He was so big. You know, people lining up, all ministers and this and that and all. People are lining up, you know, in hundreds of them, you know, with this Chotasa Brahman from somewhere, you know. Why would the king even want to meet him? He had nothing to offer. He kept on supplying the cook with this Tudu Valai spinach. And it came on his plate and said, Tudu Valai. Wow, this is my favorite. Who sent it to you? You know, he started eating it tung, 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 every day. He's enjoying it every day. And after several months, one fine day, deliberately, Ramesha said, no, I will not supply today. So then he was enjoying every day. And then he said, where is Tudu Valai? He says, no, today that fellow didn't supply. So who's that he? He said, there is one nice person who loves you. He really has a well-wisher for you. And he says, give this to the king. It's good for his brains, good for his strength, good for his health. So he can really rule the kingdom nicely. He said, really? He's my well-wisher? Call him. Call him. So he bypassed the whole line and called him. And said, who are you? He said, no, you know something, my dear king? Your grandfather Nathamuni has left behind a great wealth for you. And I did this to that, I can take you to your wealth. He said, really? I need wealth. I'm expanding and I'm in need of, I want to conquer more lands so that I need money for my armory and all this sort of things. So I need money. I said, can you take me to that place? He said, come. So they started walking out of the kingdom. I said, going out. I said, there is a place where there's a lot of wealth and there is a lot of snakes. It's guarding this wealth. So, but it's a very secret place. But I'll take you nonetheless. Because Nathamuni told me about this. She took him out. They went walking out of the kingdom. Sitting under a tree and discussing, and this Ramesha started deciding beautiful slokas of Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Oh, nice slokas. All slokas of Bhagavad Gita. Beginning from the first chapter, nice recitation with melodious sound and devotional language. Oh, and that somehow ignited. It ignited the dormant attachment with Yamanacharya, as a small boy, had learnt in his school all these things. But now he had been covered over. Now it's not getting revived. So nothing goes vain. When a child is given Krishna consciousness and youth, at adolescent, he may lose contact with Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada also apparently lost some connection with Krishna consciousness as an adolescent, you know, college-going boy, till it was revived again by, you know, Srila Prabhupada, Saraswati Thakur. But in between, he was sort of, you know, is seen, at least in this mortal leela, as a person who was not really a strict spiritualist, but he became a strict nationalist. Very strict nationalist. So it may happen, Founder Acharya gives an example, it may happen that at that age when you are really, you know, experimenting with material energy as a teenager, adolescent boy, most of us have gone through that, we know that. So after all, we've got to invest in something good in childhood, is gone there, it just surface deep and you just scratch it and it may come out. So you just scratched it, said, okay, well, let's go move along. I said, I'm feeling so nice, after years and years, I'm hearing the shlokas of Bhagavad Gita. Wow, what a pleasure. It's feeling so nostalgic to again go back to the Gurukul. So let's walk further. And then he goes further, further down and digs into the Ranganath temple. And you have this snake. And he looks at Ranganath Swami, this beautiful deity, worshipped by Brahma and Lord Ramachandra. A glorious history of this deity is there. He's come to the material world, Vibhishan gave it. And he's sitting there in a lying down position. And when he saw Ranganath Swami, wow, the volcano of his devotion. His desire to gain spiritual wealth was awakened strongly. Right? So in this way, character, integrity, simplicity, these are such virtues which you cannot buy with wealth. You cannot buy simplicity of the heart. You cannot buy integrity. It's such a powerful quality. Integrity. What is integrity? Integrity means the power to resist temptations and stay by your ideals in the midst of provoking situations and temptations around you. When you still stick to your ideals, and all of us have provoking situations, tempting situations all the time, do the wrong thing. When we know that we know the right thing, but we want to do, but we're still dragged by some powerful force to do the wrong thing. But if somebody has the power of integrity, he will have the power to resist those things. Thakur Haridas is an example of how his integrity helped him when prostitute attacked him, when Mayadevi attacked him. He kept to his guns, kept on chanting Hare Krishna mantra. Right? He never lost his control. Nobody was there in the jungle all alone. Nobody would have known. But you don't have made history. He would be like one of those anybody else who just fell down to some good looking lady. But we today glorify his example because integrity was powerful. He never gave away. So that's the thing. So these are things which we call a spiritual wealth. And that pursuit of a life of simplicity, integrity, character gives a person dignity. That gives him dignified. He becomes dignified. And it is this dignity, when observed by Sri Guru and Krishna, in the heart of a practicing, spiritually awakened person, which attracts Krishna's grace in his life. Though all our chanting of rounds, and all our archana vidhi, and all our fasting, should help us to do just this, to gain an attraction for amassing these beautiful virtues of the heart. Dukhi attracted Mahaprabhu Chaitanya with the power of her simplicity, the attraction she had, the wealth of simplicity, and Mahaprabhu detected that wealth in Sudhuki's heart. Wow, she has a wealth of simplicity. You get love of God for that. Right? So when Mahaprabhu and the Lord detects all these things within the heart of a practicing person, then he is pleased. And that's our road. The ongoing evolution on the path of Krishna consciousness. Krishna takes us further and further and further and further. So let's really pray for these things. There's nothing wrong with material wealth. Let's not condemn material wealth, because Mahaprabhu Chaitanya, when he was talking to three people, Narahari Sarkar, Mukunda and Raghunandan Thakur, he did tell to Mukunda, you must give your life to earn material and spiritual wealth. Of course, that was for the Grihasthas. That may not be applicable to the Brahmacharis at all. That may be something about Raghunandan was told. He worshipped the deities and Narayasaka was supposed to preach. But Mukunda, as a grihasa, was told, you can do both things. You can amass material and spiritual wealth. If you have spiritual wealth like character and morality, then you know you will not abuse the thing which you will get by your hard work, honest work. Even it comes to millions or billions of dollars, you will not abuse those dollars in wrong things because of the integrity of character. Right? So, very important is we do not allow people to say, okay, what's in money? It's all maya, you know, money, you know. We don't condemn money. That's mayavada. That's outright mayavada. But we allow people who have money to add to their money a life of integrity and character. Where they understand, Isha Vasham Idam Sarvam. That is character. That everything belongs to God. And I'm possession of this wealth on behalf of God. Let me use this for God's seva. That's all about Artha Forum and all that we have. It's all about that. Right? So it is not about money, but non-possessiveness is what is more important than not possessing money. So a devotee is supposed to practice the character of non-possessiveness. It's not about not having money. You can have money, you can have name, you can have fame, you can have prestige. But then you are non-possessive about it, then that fame and all which you have, you pass it on to your spiritual master in the parampara. If somebody gives a lot of fame and name, you know it's coming from Krishna. Prabhupada is an example. Worldwide fame. He didn't take any part of the fame. Passed on to Krishna. So you will get fame if you do good things in this world. It's unavoidable. You do nice things, people will think you are, oh, you're a famous fellow. He's a good guy. Nice. Some accolades will come. Appreciation will come. Garlands will come. Praises will come. Appreciation will come. But then because of integrity of character, he said, this is not me. I learned to live this life, or whatever I'm living, trying to live as, by the mercy of my spiritual master and the Vaishnavas. If I learned it from them, and thus I'm trying to live my life in their accordance of their teachings, the glory goes to them, not to me. Very simple. That's called as non-possessive behavior. In non-possessive behavior, you get a consciousness which is non-sticky. Your non-sticky consciousness. Like your surfaces, you know, which are non-sticky, like you have wax, you pour water over wax, you find the wax will never take water. But any amount of wax over water, it will always slide over. So if you want to have a non-sticky consciousness, the material energy will not stick to you, you become non-possessive. The moment you go non-possessive in your heart, Ishavashamidam Sarvam, everything belongs to God. So everything belongs to God, then whatever all the name and whatever try to stick to you, because you have a coating of non-possessiveness, nothing sticks. Nothing sticks to your consciousness. Because you are insulated by the virtue of non-possessive behavior. Right? So we would like to cultivate this consciousness. And in this way, when you have this sort of thing, then really our hearts can really go deep into amassing spiritual wealth. And what is the highest jewel in this wealth box of the heart? The highest jewel in this wealth box of the heart, which character takes you towards, morality takes you towards, integrity of heart takes you towards, is this fruit of love. The jewel in your wealth box is the jewel of your own love for God. If we can access that love within our own hearts, we have reached the highest wealth that God gave us at the time we were in this material world. He sent us a material world, but did not keep away the wealth from our hearts. That wealth of the heart was still there in that, along with us. Through all the species of life, it was still there. Only now, by God's grace, we are able to open it up, access it. Yes, when you get this love of God, access it. Complete fulfillment of the heart. Rejoice. Happiness. There's not just sukha anymore. It is complete ananda. It's complete ananda, right? So Krishna is glorifying this beautiful verse in few nice lines, and is coaxing us to come to Him with this attitude of a non-possessive behavior, because only they, and therefore Krishna has called this part, this beautiful one word, which is akinchana gocharam. He is, when you have non-possessive behavior, only then you can possess God. God becomes a part of your heart. You possess God. Krishna se tomar, Krishna dite paro, tomara shakati acha. Krishna becomes a property of the Vaishnava. That's Param Vaishnava. Krishna se tomar. Krishna becomes that person's asset of the heart. dite paro. You can give him, Krishna will be given, he can give Krishna to so many others. Prabhupada had Krishna, he gave Krishna to so many other people. Right? So this is the wealth of the heart, which we are looking for, lifetimes after lifetimes after lifetimes. And we have this opportunity, by Prabhupada's mercy, in this beautiful movement, to stick around, do our prescribed duty, live as good moralist, pursue the wealth of our souls through our sadhana process, and aspire for this great, great, great longing to get the supreme wealth of the kingdom of God. Thank you very much. It is late. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.